Good evening, revolutionaries. Revolutionary, revolutionary. I can't even know the name of my own company anymore. I kept saying New Jersey Revolution Radio, which we used to be. But we're not anymore. And for some reason, a very, very common mispronunciation of our name was always Revolutionary Radio. People, hey, Brian, I know you from Revolutionary Radio. And now I'm saying it. I should have stayed in bed today. We had a great Idavox report. So if you didn't get a chance to check out the Idavox report, the podcast ain't out yet. It's going to go out right after this show. It just ran up against time on my download and upload speeds. So that'll be out soon. And then today we're going to come at you like we do every Wednesday with NJRR Live. And what is that? If you're just tuning in for the first time, we look around the country for grassroots activism. We are a proletariat driven, revolutionary, independent media network. We're fueled by an editorial board, and you're going to meet a couple of our editorial board members tonight. So people are asking me, you know, what are you doing for an editorial board? Are you just scamming people? They pay for your podcast? No, they're taking part. They're in meetings. They're coming up with ideas. And tonight, two of them, we're going to have a panel discussion on something very, very interesting. Technology replacing labor, which is something, you know, as a former member of the Teamsters, the mob-run fraud union that's filled with scumbags. As a former member of the Teamsters, I know a lot of my comrades, a lot of the good working people that pay the dues, that pay the salaries of the mob-run dirtbags that run the Teamsters. Those good people, their jobs are in jeopardy, and it has a lot to do with transportation and self-driving cars and all that. So great topic of discussion. And of course, one of my favorite topics of discussion will be cannabis tonight with our in-house weed scholar and expert, who I see in the background is very excited and ready for her for her appearance on NJR Live. But I want to take a moment before we get into our revolutionary discussion to celebrate the passing of a horrible man. Rush Limbaugh died today, and no better thing could have happened to America than to be rid of his voice. Unfortunately for all of us who are left behind, we have to deal with the repercussions of what he did. And what he did cannot be understated as far as the rise of fascism in America. And I know this because he touched my life. As a young man, I wasn't a socialist. I wasn't politically educated, and I was brought up to believe America was fabulous and all that kind of stuff. And for some reason, even though my dad was a union guy and considered himself a socialist at times, I just kind of, my rebellion was being more conservative. And I think some of that was influenced by around the time I got my driver's license, I found a radio station with this guy on it. And he started filling my head full of a bunch of shit at a very impressionable young age. And, you know, when I look back, you know, on my military service and my younger years and my racism and all these things that I've had to, you know, work on and overcome and are still with me today and still things that get me into fucking shitty situations because I'm clumsy and my white privilege comes out. And a lot of the racism that I had to beat back and recognize within myself was instilled by Rush Limbaugh. And I want to thank everybody out there that tolerates me and has put up with me and all my revolutionary comrades that have developed me from that conservative young man into, you know, a Marxist-Leninist today. I mean, there were stages in that development. I didn't just wake up one morning and be like, hey, Lenin was right and I'm going to do this. No, there was a transition from that into somebody who said, and it was my comrades here today and who have been with me over the last 20 or 30 years that helped facilitate that transition. So today, I'm celebrating the death of a horrible man, but I'm also going to celebrate the people around me today who helped get me out of his clutches and away from that conservative movement, because we see over these last few weeks and months exactly the path that that fucking asshole was trying to lead me down. I'm glad I didn't go down with it. And we're here today to educate the masses so that maybe, just maybe, we'll touch those 17 and 18-year-olds today before somebody like Rush Limbaugh gets a hold of him. Because unfortunately, there's a lot more of Rush Limbaugh's out there. All his minions are out there now. And the effect of David Duke and, you know, all the guys that Daryl Lamont Jenkins has been working on identifying for the past 30 years, all their education, all their teachings, all their racism and all their hate is still with millions and millions of people in this country. And I think, you know, that's the real struggle there. And that's what independent media is out here to do. We're also here to dress up and talk about weed because that's fun. And Not all of revolution is celebrating the death of horrible people. Some of it's smoking grass and talking about weed laws. Leah Giantonio is a graduate of the Stockton University Cannabis Studies Program. Did I say that right, Leah?
You did say that right. Absolutely. It's a relatively new program that we've got going on. And I basically hopped on right as soon as I found out. I was like, yo. So basically for the program, I had to take three central classes, which were Intro to Medical Marijuana, Cannabis Internship Program Preparation, and Cannabis Law. And then after that, I also had to do an internship, which was I did with We Were New Jersey Revolution Radio at the time. Yeah. And that's how I got started here, actually, is through that cannabis studies program. So here are some of the books that I read during my time there. It was awesome. Yeah,
that's great. So you've and to some degree, you've applied your working knowledge in cannabis studies, because we have a lot of discussions in our program. And, you know, we've had a relationship with New Jersey Weed Man and done shows from his dispensary, the People's Dispensary in Trenton, New Jersey there. And, you know, so your education is actually coming to play with what's your job right now. Right. And that's cool.
Seriously. And I was hoping this would happen. I've really been looking forward to something like this. So thank you very much for having me on.
I'm not sure if they knew they were going to bring us another communist recruit into the world when they started the cannabis studies program, but hey, we're going to take it. So yeah, no, we're really glad to have you. So now Jersey, my former home state and where you still reside, legalized cannabis by constitutional amendment. The people of New Jersey voted, more than overwhelmingly, 67%, mm-hmm. I believe was around the final number, along with a few other states. And there was some other, there was a state that legalized both recreational and medical at the same time. And so there's been a lot in the last 12, 30 months of cannabis law changes. Are you on top of that? Have you been able to keep up on all these? Because I'm trying to learn how to grow and stuff myself up here a little bit, because you can grow in Maine. Are you on top of the laws? Are you following what's going on in your study profession?
Yeah, it was definitely a lot easier when I had a class called Cannabis Law, which was actually taught by a lawyer. So that was amazing. But I still do my best to keep up. It can be a little bit disheartening, complicated, definitely. But I've been reading up on what's been happening lately. So basically what happened was the Constitution of New Jersey, an amendment was added because of the vote that said that people age 21 and older, they can cultivate, process, and sell retail marijuana. But without the legislation hand in hand with that, it's pretty much useless. So actually, it's very sad, but since that time, the numbers vary greatly, but I've seen between 3,500 and 6,000 arrests have been made. So it's Jesus. Been very real. Yeah.
So wait a second. So now, and I was just I hate to complain about me all the time. I was complaining about my weed arrest on the Eye to Vox show last night, because I got arrested for legal weed. And I was, you know, I'm still ongoing legal fights with that. But you're telling me that even though the 67%, almost 70% of voting New Jerseyans wanted this legal, not only have they not really made it, have they really made it happen legally yet? Like, you can't go to the stores and buy weed yet. They're still arresting people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Right. It's really dangerous, actually, because there's a lot of reasons it's dangerous. So according to the American Civil Liberties Union of New Jersey, Black people are 3.5 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession than white people, even though the usage rate is very similar. So as I said before, there have been, like, the numbers vary, but there have been, it goes from like 3,500 to 6,000 arrests have been made since then. And so, yeah, when people are engaged and they interact with the police, any moment can lead to an escalation. And that's what we've been seeing. So if we do the math, that's at least 1,500 unnecessary interactions between Black people and police in New Jersey this year so far, just because we can't get our shit together.
Well, Honestly, it has been the experience of anybody that's dealt with trying to challenge law enforcement, that law enforcement doesn't follow the law. They don't care, in other words. And I think what you see in New Jersey, which is essentially just a mob run state of thugs and overgrown monsters with small testicles running a police department, state troopers. Have you ever seen a state trooper in New Jersey? They have to be at least 6'5" and be related to a silverback, because they're all like these monstrous steroid abusing thugs. And so clearly, and if you've ever been around somebody that uses roids, they're not cool people to be around. Nobody really likes hanging around their roided up friend because they're fucking assholes. Well, guess who the state? Take a look at a state trooper in New Jersey, and you tell me there ain't a steroid abuse program within that trooper division. And sure, right, yeah, okay,
yeah.
So like you said, these interactions become dangerous to a level. But on top of that, they don't even follow the law. They just arrest who they feel like that day. And if the reason you get arrested that day may just simply be because some dude with small balls didn't get laid last night, and he's still hungover, and that's it, you're going to jail. That's really the reason why you might get arrested in New Jersey.
Yes, and like, it's the attorney general has since then actually said, like, okay, we shouldn't be following up on these, but like, still, just because you can't get in like serious long-term trouble, you can still like be incarcerated, you can still have to pay all these fees. It actually can still be a long-term ordeal, because you still have to like go into court for some reason just to clear your name. Like, it's stupid.
Years. I've been over a year on this, my stupid little charge of mine. And you know, you go into the court and they don't even, like, you got to go into court 2 or 3 or 4 times. You got to call out of work. You got to figure out childcare. I mean, court fucks up your day, man. It takes away, you know, honestly, the one time I represented myself, I have an attorney representing me now. You know, the one time I gave him a chance to throw it out, I figured maybe I'll walk in, they'll throw it out, and that'll be the end of it. Common sense will prevail. That was a year ago. You know, I mean, I was like, I got kids to feed. Like, stop. Don't drag me in here again. I'm here now. Dispense with justice and let's all go home. But no, they really do spend an enormous. So I think, you know, people have to start understanding what it means to get arrested
And I want to talk actually about like,
and then on top of it, like you said, let's not leave out the police brutality on people, especially who don't look and sound like me.
Yeah, I just want to like hold Governor Murphy accountable, because if you remember 4 years ago, he was the weed guy. He was, I'm going to get in, we're going to do this, we're doing this. And right now there are at least 2 pieces of legislature outlining marijuana being legalized, sitting on his desk, but he won't do it. He won't do it. Oh, that's a good question.
It is. We're going to address it. Yeah, let's. I want to wrap it up.
But anyway, yeah, I'm just saying that, like, he has these legislations, and there's a bunch of reasons which we can get into why he's not doing it, but it's all bullshit. So there's one thing where he said, children should have to pay fines, right, if they're arrested with marijuana. But some lawmakers are arguing that no, children shouldn't have to pay fines, or should it be $500 or $250? So they're waiting to that discrepancy. There's also the social justice end, where people want the legislature to include expungement, and they want to set aside revenue for communities that have been disproportionately harmed. But unfortunately, that's like not going to be so easy, because the legislation doesn't already include expungement. The legislation just includes that it's legal, so like it should just be legal, instead of like people shouldn't just
I'll be on top of the New Jersey legislation, and what I've found, you know, from state to state varies. And you have a state like Oregon, which it just, you know, decriminalized everything basically. And their cannabis laws are way better. Maine up here, I'm way at more at ease in the state of Maine with my cannabis and my use. And even though, you know, I have the card, but it's recreationally legal up here and it's been medically legal. And the way they've set up the system is better. It's not perfect. And I don't want to sit here and say there's no problems with it. There are small problems with it. But I mean, we've got a lot of weed stores up here. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we got so many. There's a ton. And it's really, it's a very at ease environment, I think. And some of it does have to do with the acceptance by law enforcement. I can see up here, there are cops that have been involved in businesses that own pot shops and stuff. I mean, there's been an uncomfortable integration for me. I really don't want to own a pot shop with a cop, but hey, I'm just saying that there isn't the head-on challenges that you see in some other states, for instance, New Jersey. You know,
yeah, for sure. I mean,
but thanks for bringing the perspective. I didn't want to cut you off there. What do you got?
Oh, no, it's okay. I just wanted to say that one of the other things is that there's the issue of cultivation, whether or not people are going to be allowed to grow marijuana. And that's another reason that people aren't, that the legislation isn't going through, but it should just be going through anyway, and they can settle that later.
Well, in honor, I don't know if you have any marijuana, but I do have a question for you. So I've got, hang on. So one of the things I learned up here, I got a friend of mine say I need a little help at a shop, come by with some labor. So I did so. And I made hash for the first time in my life. I made hash. I made bubble hash, which is really cool. You have to filter cast all shot. Like I got a little bit of the weed here. Right. So if anybody knows what weed looks like, if you don't know what weed looks like, whatever, but that's what it looks like. Right. And on it is crystals and you shake those crystals loose and then you do a bunch of stuff. I'm not going to tell everybody here what he taught me how to do because like trade secrets and stuff, but you wind up with little balls of crystals gummed up. But one is really darker than the other. And that's what I wanted to test your knowledge of both legal and actual cannabis. So why, let's see if you understand. Wait, we're going the wrong way. Why is one hash brick darker than the other?
All right, so according to my scholarly knowledge, I would have to say that the lighter hash there is probably lighter because it has more and better preserved trichomes. Like if you have just a plain old nug of weed, you can look at it up close and you'll see these kind of white crystals on the end, and that's actually where you're getting your THC and your psychoactive high from. So if you have more of those white crystals, your hash is going to look lighter, and it's going to be darker if it has kind of less or less preserved crystals. So
all right, so let me open my door here. As I said, on my back porch is where I do my show from the back porch. Jimmy Dora does his show from the garage. I do it from the back porch because I can smoke weed here. Now, let's just see if those whiter trichomes taste better. All right, definitely. Now, I needed that hit to answer the question on our screen here, Leah. Oh, yeah. God. Why not have both capitalism and socialism? From Insan Boy, I think that's, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Doesn't sound like a real name, but okay, Insan, why not? Well, simply, capitalism sucks. So that's why, number one. But also, we do have capitalism and socialism. There are capitalist countries and there are socialist countries. So they do coexist. How's that working out for us, dude? How are we getting along with Venezuela these days, huh? I don't think that these two kinds of philosophies can compete and exist very long, essentially because they do compete over the existence of private property. And whereas the capitalist says that private property will be mine and I'll get all the money from it because it's mine, and I'm white and I'm mine. The communist says that it's ours because we all work on developing a society together, and I'm cool with sharing what's ours with everybody because I would rather live in peace with my fellow man than sit here and stomp my feet until I have a big pile of fucking money that I'll never spend. That's why capitalism and socialism can't exist together. Insan Boy.
I would add... Well, no, that's very good. But capitalism is just so deeply entrenched with racism. And there's something that I feel like a lot of people haven't heard of, and it's that you can't tolerate intolerance. There's just, you can't tolerate racism, so therefore we cannot tolerate capitalism. No.
I mean, it's a complicated discussion. What I'd like to say is, because, you know, if you want to transition peacefully from capitalism to socialism, there has to be some coexistence for a period of time, right? But, you know, it's a very complicated, but I'll tell you, they can't coexist. And it's not, and honestly, I think if you could pitch it to socialists and communists that, you know, capitalists will exist while socialism and communism comes into existence, that would be fine. But that's not good. The capitalist attitude is, I'm going to kill everybody that disagrees with me and make more money. Very hard bargain to drive. Anyway, let's do a commercial because I want to get to our panel. I feel good now. That hash is awesome. Yeah,
thank you so much. Wow. This is great.
So really quickly, a commercial for the editorial board of Revolution Radio, which is a group of people that bring you this discussion today and bring you our website, our platforms, our training programs that are starting to go on behind the scenes. I did Organizing 101. I did a couple of classes. They were fun. They were small classes, but they're really fun little discussions. You can meet a couple of organizers, old and newer organizers. Come around and check it out. So being a member of the editorial board, you don't have to pay the $20 ticket cost. You can just show up to any of the trainings you want for free. You can also get more involved. You can start producing segments and shows and all that kind of stuff. And we'll help you learn how to use media basically for activism. And you're about to see one of the products of our editorial board here in our next segment. So with no further delay, I'm going to add Marilyn and Pat to the stream today. Hey, everybody. How are you?
Hi.
Leah, well, we're going to keep Leah around because Leah is, I think it looks better with four on the screen, right? More symmetric.
Thanks.
That's good. All right. So Marilyn is out of Florida. And I mean, really quickly, I was doing some online organizing and recruiting and stuff. We had some interaction on a Facebook thread, and before I knew it, she was on the editorial board and has probably been one of the more active editorial board members. And I'm scared of burning you out, sister. I told you that I am, but, you know, she came on board and has certainly, taken a lot on, and I hope she's been enjoying her time with us here at Revolution Radio. But I really, I'm grateful for your contributions over these past couple of weeks, and you know, I hope there's many more to come. Pat is a comrade of mine for many years, so we have some new and old in my life. Pat, I met in my old union, the IBEW 827, when we worked for Big Red, Verizon, at Corporate Monster. I left a little earlier than Pat. He continued on to retirement. He's living out in New Mexico now. There's his cat in the background. I love, we have a lot of cats with comrades. That's cool. So welcome to the show. Marilyn, let's start with you. Like I told everybody, you're newer. And we met kind of just in a public online forum. How do you like activism in media so far?
Super excited. I'm so glad that you're doing this and that I can be a part of it. I'm just excited about what more we can do. And I have a lot of ideas and look forward to the future.
Yeah. So and we've started to develop some of those ideas and we're starting to kind of learn how to work together. So I'm excited. And tonight's show is something that you have a little bit of experience with through the medical field. And that's labor and technology and how that's taken over. And Pat, this was actually your kind of show idea. We talked about it a couple of weeks. We were chatting in a Zoom room, probably having a smoke and bullshitting over some coffee. Like any good idea comes up. You wrote a blog about this a while ago. I think that's what brought it up. What inspired that blog? And it was a couple of years ago. What have you seen like in the area of labor and technology? Where's this discussion coming from? How was it, Ditto Hedge?
Hello, everybody. Well, you know, I mean, I just think, you know, the technology is such a huge part of our lives. And, you know, there's good things about it. And there's, you know, there's bad things about it. And I think one of the bad things about it, because of what we were talking about before, capitalism, I think, if we had socialism or communism, I think technology would be, would be much different. It wouldn't put people out of work. You know, it would enhance people's lives. So, you know, now it puts people out of work. You know, I mean, most of the technology that's created in like business and stuff like that is to save labor time and increase profits. You know what I mean? And so we got, you know, Bezos and Musk with $180, $190 billion. And we got the workers that work in Tesla and Amazon making median wage of $35,000 a year, which is not a living wage in any state in the union. You know, and that's the kind of thing that's just going to keep, that's going to get worse. You know, the more technology saves labor and the more people are put out of work, which means the more people are desperate to get a job. And we already have an overproduction of college graduates. There's already way too many college graduates out there. I mean, for jobs. I mean, I'm not saying people shouldn't go to college. It's good. But
right.
I mean, the old idea where you went to college and you got a job, it's not so simple anymore. That's one reason, you know, the DSA has all these people in it. Because a lot of these people
I'm a recent college graduate. Yeah. I'll tell you, man, it's a good thing you guys have me on because the job market right now is shit. Go on, Pat.
And it's been, you know, it goes up and down, but it's been that way for years. You know, it's been that way for years.
It does go up and down. I wanted to ask Marilyn specifically because you kind of had a good segue there to a question I had for Marilyn because you're in the medical profession. I'm not really sure what your title is. Are you a medical assistant or
surgical technologist?
I say that again. I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit on me.
I'm a surgical technologist.
Oh, cool.
Surgical technologist. That sounds really cool. But what I saw was like, so under capitalism, you see this kind of flood into hot jobs. And I do remember like there was technology flood, like you had to get into technology and build circuit boards. And then you had to get into massaging, and then you had to get into medical assistance. And there's this ton of schools for profit schools that popped up with promises of job placement services. The market gets flooded with labor, so even if you do get a job, it's like $10 an hour. I mean,
that's
so
the plan.
So you add that to technology, Marilyn. You know, you're nodding your head and kind of agreeing with me, you know, while I'm saying it. So I don't know. I lost my question there. But specifically in medical field, as we talk about, I mean, are you still seeing flooding into certain areas, even just within the medical field, and then that overpopulation problem? Is that something that's continued?
So nursing is certainly still growing. In terms of what was being said earlier, certainly the whole, like, you know, not being able as millennials to ensure that you will be employed post college in whatever it is that you majored in. This is a defining characteristic of my generation. And then the quick fix, you know, 1 year, 2 year job training program that in a growing segment of the economy where there's a lot of supposed need, I definitely fall into that with my profession. I have a lot of friends, my peers that went to college are in deep debt, never exercised their major, whatever it was they went to school for. They spent tens of thousands of dollars to, you know, get a degree in, never realized that potential because the job market just wasn't there.
My wife is one of them. You know, my wife, we spent money on private school. I think she works in retail. Yay. I mean, it really was, you know, and it was something that she was excited about. And it's not, I mean, we, you know, the financial, you know, the student loan thing and the financial aspect is one thing. There's also that, you thought you were going to get into something to take care of people and have a nice little career and a decent salary. And you, you really were conned out of an important part of life, you know, because that's where you kind of set your path. And now you got to kind of back up and start over again, you know, when that job that you expect or even the field that you expected is not right. open to you or can't really provide you, you know, with that living. Pat, the article that you wrote, like you said, it was kind of inspired by these technology. But that article was a few years ago. I forget what year you wrote it in. The blog that we took.
Yeah, I mean, it was a while ago that I wrote it. I mean, things haven't changed all that much in the last 7 or 8 years. They've gotten a little worse, but the conditions are the same. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know.
Yeah, they've come with the true. Technology aspect, anyway. Yeah. And that economic argument, like you said, under a socialist or a communist system, would be nothing but a net positive for the working class. Because really, I mean, the idea that if I come in for 50 hours a week and a machine can do 30 hours of those labor, then I should come in for 20 hours a week, you know, and that's the way it should work. But what will happen is I'll get fired. They'll have one person do those 40 hours and give the boss the money. And so we see why the
stockholders
ownership of property. Yeah, so well, you know, the arguments, I mean, what other arguments do we need to make to tell people, listen, this is something we have to do and we have to do fast because technology is moving at a pace that I don't think humans can keep up with anymore.
Well, so, I mean,
go ahead.
Pat, go ahead. We'll get back to you, Marilyn. We got you. Hold on.
I mean, I just think that, I mean, all this, I mean, all right, so technology and, you know, the unemployment that it creates is going to create more desperate people, which is going to create more what they're calling extremism now. And that's going to create more, you know, more surveillance, more crackdowns, more dissent. All that stuff is, you know, which could be, if it's taken in the right direction, possibly a good thing. But, you know, that's a thing that could happen too. So it's going to make general conditions just, you know, worse and worse, you know what I mean? And what's the out, you know what I mean? What's the out if we don't change the system? Because, I mean, I guess that's why like Andrew Yang is into, you know, he's like a decent tech billionaire type of guy. You know, he at least wants to give everybody a little money. I mean, I'll give him a little pat on the back for that. You know what I mean? I'll give him a little pat.
It's also racist against Asian people.
Is he? I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, yeah. You got it. Andrew Yang's a crypto fascist. He really is. He's
I know. I know he's a libertarian. I know that. But I mean, he had one good idea. You know what I mean? I like, you know.
Okay.
It's like good. Murphy. Murphy wanted
want to be careful.
Murphy wanted to, you know, legalize pot and create a public bank in New Jersey. I agree with both of those ideas. I think they're good ideas. And, you know, so I'll give him a pat in the back for that. Mostly he stinks.
He's done neither. But,
well, the pot.
Yeah.
Get into the pot. Get into the pot. The bank, no. But, you know, so. All right. I guess I'm done.
Marilyn.
Yes.
Yes. You had something. We were asking about what we could do. To kind of like what can we realistically do? I don't know. Realistically, I don't like talk about realistic things. What should we be doing to kind of, you know, relieve ourselves of labor through technology?
I think we should embrace it fully. That's my view. Capitalism will eat itself. It will always seek profits over people, and automation driving people out of jobs is just the next step, the next natural progression of capitalism. And I think that humanity should embrace that. People shouldn't be doing bullshit jobs. They shouldn't be on the street holding up signs for, you know, some store on the side of the street. They should be pursuing their passions, and we should be moving humanity forward.
So, like, I'm kind of thinking about that too, like what would be ideal. And so Ryan was kind of mentioning like, oh, if we can have robots do the work 20 hours or 40 hours a week, I'm saying if robots are there, we can have them do all the menial tasks. Like, unless you like doing menial tasks, but like people should be allowed to find their creative passions. Like, robots, AI, as far as we are right now, it doesn't have creative reasoning. And that's part of the reason I have this job. Like, I can write creatively. I know how to tag things in a funny, interesting way and draw people in. And that's good. And we should allow people to channel their creative passions, because it makes me happy. And I think it's what makes people happy.
So can I ask you a question? Let me, because I want to push back on you just a little bit. I don't want to make you feel bad, but when you say menial jobs, what if I like being a janitor?
Oh, what yeah. What if I like that? No, that's true.
I know your intentions weren't bad, but I'm saying, like, you know, I fantasize often with friends that I could just find a job as a window washer, but I need it to pay me $90,000 a year. Because I don't really derive my pleasure from my labor. I derive my pleasure from my family. So the only reason for I went to work at Verizon really was, you know, I did like the job, but it was to feed my family. It was so I could come home. And when I was robbed of that time through overtime and scheduling changes and all this other garbage that kind of interfered with my life, I saw, even though I was making more money than I'll ever make again in my life, I wasn't happy because I was working all the time and I didn't derive my pleasure. I derived my pleasure when I got to go home and spend time with my wife and kids. So I think that, you know, in technology, I think that my aspect of is I'd like to spend less time at work, you know, because of technology and because I'm making more money or because of all these changes. And I'll even do something that necessarily isn't my dream job. If I got to go in for 10 hours a week and do whatever I got to do for the rest of the world, you could have 10 to 20 hours of my life a week. I'll do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But after that, fuck off.
Sorry, Marilyn wants to say something, but I just want to say first, like, I didn't mean anything by menial jobs. Like, if you like doing work that could be considered simple, all the power to you. Like, that could be very fulfilling too. And people are always going to want human interaction. Some people will always want that in the market. So I do believe there will always be a space for that window washer, you know, to be a person. Okay. And Marilyn, what did you have to say?
I just wanted to say there's a huge difference between being a window washer because you have a boss that's telling you that you need to wash a certain amount of windows within the hour a certain way, and you washing the windows because you want to and because you just want to make them as sparkly and streak-free and as great, you know, as you can possibly make it. And you get a satisfaction by yourself from doing this menial task, which allows you to maybe, you know, take a break from thinking, or, you know, you can listen to music or whatever it is you want to do. There's a huge difference between someone else telling you to do something and you doing it because you want to do it.
Yeah. But there is also the aspect of, I don't like the idea or the perception that's out there that communists or socialists are lazy people that don't like to work. You know, because it can become selfish the other way, where like, I'm only going to do what I want to do. And if you don't want to pay me to do it, then I'm not going to do it. The world needs doctors, you know, and if nobody wants to be a doctor, we're all going to die. So I think there's an aspect of, we need to contribute to society together. And that may mean contributing time to labor, which may not be in your, you know, preferred, you know, thing. I can't, you know, and I think it does stem from some of my anarchist comrades out there. You know, I love all their postmodernist structural, whatever they call it, but you know, it kind of stems from on the revolutionary side of like, I don't want to be told what to do by nobody. Like that's not being a revolutionary. That's being a bourgeoisie douchebag, honestly, is somebody who's completely unaccountable to anybody because they're free and they're social. No, that's not. So I do think there's got to be, you know, contributions to society from all of us. And that's not always what we want to do. You know, so I think there's a balance there. And I hope that, you know, we're reasonable in when we overthrow the United States government and institute a dictatorship of the proletariat. When you become Minister of Labor and Technology, what would be your edict?
I'm not going to talk about the revolution because, you know, you could get you in trouble these days. So I'm just going to say, but on the idea, I think that if we, you know, if we think, as you were saying about, you know, the basic tasks, the needs of society being provided by minimal labor, 10 hours, 15 hours a week. And then we all have all this time to do the things that we want. We could have, you know, networks of tens of millions of people who know about like cancer, researching cancer, trying to come up with cures, working together. I mean, the whole world, everybody's creative, you know, juices flowing and working together, especially with internet technology, it would be great. Right now we got the great innovators who, you know all the stuff and they create it. And that, you know, the fact that we have 200,000 years of human, you know, evolution that you know, that springs every idea that anyone has in our current moment, people don't see that, but we do. I mean, what would we be? You know, no idea comes out of someone's head. We have 200,000, 300,000 years of evolution, you know? I mean, somebody innovated fire and a mortar and a pestle, and that changed society, you know? And we don't know who they are. They weren't famous and they weren't rich. You know what I mean? And, you know, so, I mean, I'm just saying, but like, we learn to work right together. Now. Yeah, but yeah, man, you know, what would we be? So, I mean, I just think that, you know, we really are limiting, like, capitalism limits the masses and lets a few people achieve great, quote unquote, greatness. I mean, you know, and it's sad. It's just sad. It's so beyond exploitation, beyond all like racism and sexism and all the things that capitalism creates. It's just sad that human potential is so truncated by, you know, by this system of exploitation. It's just, you know, it's horrible. I mean, we have so much potential.
It's a dominant system.
We still live in the Stone Age in many ways, I think, really. You know what I mean? I really do. I think we're still in a very primitive stage of evolution of the human species. That's what I
recently think. Former president, I think, brought that a lot out. I think, you know, these last 4 years have really brought out quite a bit of the primitive nature of man.
That was reverted.
Whether it exposed it or encouraged it or whatever, it's definitely there in a larger, you know, presence today. But we do like to make sure we try to get some positive vibes out there. And I think we've talked some solutions. I want to bring up universal basic income. I mean, I think when we talk about steps towards socialism in the United States, the idea that the first off, it's out there. The talk has been put out there. It was put out there during this. We should have gotten it when coronavirus hit. I mean, immediately. But I think this is one of the things that revolutionaries have pushed into the conversation and need to continue to push, because it's not like we're still arguing over $15 an hour minimum wage. Pat and I were getting like when we were rallying for that, and like, I don't know. I don't even know. It was
for burger flippers. You want to pay burger flippers $15 an hour?
Crazy. And Florida just passed it. Right. I mean, it's a, I mean, they're still catching up. So you see how long it takes to push something like a minimum wage. But I do think there's something to be said for momentum and a crisis moment here. And we know that our enemies use crisis moments to reinforce white supremacy and a carceral state. We should really be using these moments to push forward things like healthcare and like a universal basic income. I really think it's there. There's a problem with it, though. There's a lot of libertarians that like a universal basic income, but not for really good reasons.
Yeah.
Because they feel like, okay, fine, we'll give you $2,000 a month, but that's it for every social program on the face of the earth. Yeah. No more SNAP benefits, no more health care, no more Medicare, no more Social Security, no more nothing. That's it. You're going to get a flat rate check-in. And then ultimately what you'll see them, if they were to ever succeed in that madness, they would just whittle away at that monthly benefit until you die. So, yeah, I mean, so we have to watch that discussion. That's my worry about UBI. But we all have to, I think, at least chip into the conversation. Leah, I don't know if you're familiar with, we can start with you, but universal basic income. How big of a difference does it make in your life if you knew you were getting $2,000 a month? You know,
$2,000 how often?
I don't know. For you, a day. A month. No, I'm just saying. Let's just say. I mean, this isn't, we're
four
all,
G's,
this is
a 4 G's a month. Two G's isn't enough. Four G's a month.
Whatever. Let's just say calculate it out at, you know, whatever your costs would normally be for food and housing. You know, let's just say we make sure that the government got your food and housing covered. Then you can go out and work for more if you want, or if you don't want, we don't care. Sit there and live and poor. We don't care.
I mean, cool. Honestly, my mind was just wandering. Basically, the biggest difference that I think it would make in my life is that I wouldn't have to watch my dad, who is, like, not to expose him, but, like, I think he's, like, 50 now at least, and he works all day. He wakes up at 5 a.m., and he works at a hospital until 4, and then he doesn't even come home most days. He just goes right out. He goes and works, like, another 4 hours out in the county as a contractor. After working in maintenance all day, and he comes home at night, and he has maybe an hour or two of free time, and he's always smiling, but like, it makes me really sad to know that. And if I had that income, just me, I mean, forget my whole family, but like, I wouldn't have to live with that anymore, and I would be able to spend more time with him.
Marilyn. I mean, how much of a difference would it make in your life to have your housing and your food costs paid for?
A huge, huge difference. I mean, there wouldn't be any reason to stress. You know, my fiance is trying to launch a new business. That wouldn't even be an issue. You know, so many things would be taken care of that would free us up for bigger and better things. But I view UBI as just a necessary step in the transition from a capitalist system to just another system, any other system that just makes more sense. And it would be absolutely necessary to, the pandemic has absolutely exposed this. There are a lot of jobs that can be done from home, that can be done with less hours put in. A lot of jobs that are kind of made up by the capitalist system itself, and not really serving anyone in any real way. And UBI would help transition us away from all that crap.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're getting short on time. Pat, I wanted to make sure that I thank you, especially for this idea and this show. It was a cool discussion. And I think it brings home, I think, you know, like I said, in a time when we're rebuilding the world, that, you know, I started saying late last year and early on in this year that the kind of theme of 21 was getting our world back together, and we have a chance, right? Thank you, Auntie Missouri, saying I would literally cry from relief. I'd be right there with you. I'd have a party where we all go out crying in the streets for happiness. But we have a chance. I do really believe that the world, we've had this expression around revolutionary communities that we want to build a new world from the ashes of the old. Well, we've been standing in a pile of ashes, and I think it's time that we rebuild it. And hopefully some of these discussions will take place before we hit the road. Pat, you want to get in your last minute thoughts and plugs? I love that cat, by the way. The cat has been as much a part of this discussion. If you're not, you're listening to the podcast, just so you know, Pat has a black and white cat that crawled up at the beginning of the podcast, put himself right in the background there, and has been having a staring contest with the audience. To let that
I have two cats. They're sisters, Norma and Ray. They're named after the famous character from the from the movie with Sally Field, which is a great movie. I just watched it again. If you haven't ever, if you haven't seen it, try to watch it. It's really good about how to organize a union. It's very actually real too. It's good movie. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I just think that, you know, we need to, you know, begin to build a world where I think technology, I mean, and human invention is one of our greatest characteristics as a species. And if we can use that to enhance the lives of everyone, it would be such a different world and it would be so beautiful. Not that it would be perfect or a utopia, but it could be so much better. And I think that we should do whatever we can to move toward that type of technology and that type of world. You know what I mean? So I hope we can do that slowly, at least slowly, maybe, but surely. You know what I mean? So.
Thanks. Let's hear from our show writer real quick. Leah, she's been working so hard on our social media and getting content out there. And I have not been as much of a help as I can because, like any other putsy boss, I lost my phone. And so the business is suffering and, you know, making my workers' lives harder and stuff like that. But I want to thank her for all her hard work. Make sure you're sharing her stuff out there and subscribing to our YouTubes and all that. So, Leah, before we go, any last minute things? And what do people particularly need to pay attention to out there in our social media world?
So glad that you asked. Okay, now I have five things, so I'll answer your question first.
Oh, no.
Okay, so actually I wanted to make sure everyone pays attention. There's actually an article that Pat wanted to share with everyone about how the coronavirus affected the job market with machines starting to come in and how they're gonna stay probably. Yeah, and then also I wanted to kind of shamelessly promote my business. This is a jar that I made, just happened to have sitting around. I am at resin.ly on Instagram. I make a lot of really interesting creations. I also wanted to say, if anyone during the show saw me playing with this and wondered what it was, kind of just a stress relief thing. I have a squishy, it's a piece of bread. And also one more thing, a professor that I had at Stockton, he wrote this book, Robert Mejia, and he was actually like the advisor to the cannabis program, amazing guy. Just jovial, really, is the word for him. And he always, like, pushed me to get into the industry and help me believe that I can make my way into here. So if he's watching this, thank you. All right.
Check her out. You got those little things that she's got are good for gifts. I have a lot of aunts, and I come from this big Polish family where, like, I have to buy a birthday. Sorry, I have to buy a birthday gift every, like, 2 weeks or so. So it's a ton of good stuff, right? She's support your comrades. They got a little business or something online. Are you going to go to Amazon? Or are you going to buy something from resin.ly, right? And support a comrade. So we appreciate the business and appreciate all your writing and work and all that kind of stuff. Marilyn, thanks so much for your work over the past few weeks. Like I said, we all know new activists can get burnt out quick, and we're all rooting for you not to burn out too quick, but you've been contributing to our conversations and our thoughts and our productions already early on. So thanks for being a part of our editorial board. Time to say goodbye for a week, though. Last minute, what would you like our audience to do for the next week until the next NJR Live?
Like and share Revolution Radio videos. That's it.
Cool. And any more show ideas coming up that I'm supposed to be working on that you've suggested as an editorial board member?
Yes, I have many. We will talk about them on Sunday night. We have a standing date, right?
That's right. Oh, you're gonna you got to pay your dues and get into the board to find out all of Marilyn and Pat and Leah's ideas. So I thank all of them for being here tonight and contributing to, you know, Revolution Radio. I had to take a minute because I almost forgot the name of the company again. I have to stop because I've been saying, you know, Revolution Radio, Revolutionary Radio, New Jersey. I don't know. It's difficult, you know. But I was smoking hash. I think I did a pretty good fucking job for a dude that smoked like a whole bowl of this really white hash, which I got up here in Maine. Join us next week on Tuesday night, the Idavox Report. with Daryl Lamont Jenkins. We will identify and dox white supremacists. We'll listen to some music, and who knows, we'll talk about some politics or whatever. And then on Wednesday night again, NJRR Live will be here for all of you to check us out. Like Marilyn said, make sure that you share us out there. Your support helps. And if you want to contribute, you can go to our website, www.njrevolutionradio.com. That's like new journalism, revolutionradio.com. We are on Spotify and Google Play and iTunes and everywhere else you get your podcasts under Revolution Radio. So until next week, this is Brian Powers for all of our comrades here at Revolution Radio. I want you to remember that the police can quit their jobs. Good night, everybody.